الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر
In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful, the Creator and Sustainer of the universe, I greet you with all of the greetings of the prophets from Adam to Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him. Assalamu alaikum, which means peace be upon you. I'm your host, Hamid Rashid. Welcome to Islam in Focus. In today's program, we continue with our sixth program in the series on Muslim beliefs with a continuation of our discussion on the soul. I have with me Brother Dr. Jamal Badawi of St. Mary's University. Welcome to the program, Brother Jamal. I'm wondering if perhaps you could bring our viewers up to date in terms of the discussion that we started last week on the soul. Could you perhaps just summarize the discussions last week?
Sure. I think it was basically five points that we tried to make last time. Mm-hmm. One is that the belief in the life hereafter is one of the basic pillars of Islam. Mm-hmm. Secondly, we try to make it clear that at the heart of believing in the life hereafter is the belief in the existence of the soul. And we said that the soul is not necessarily something that's material. When we talk about the soul, we are not really talking about the physical life or biological life, but really something that is the secret in our creation, endowed to us by God, that makes us human beings rather than any other type of creatures. The third point was that the only dependable and authentic source for any knowledge about the soul would have to be divine revelation. And we said that intellect, experience, or experimentation are areas or tools which may be useful, but they cannot really provide a complete, non-misleading and authentic information about the soul, because this is something of the unseen, the world of the unseen. The fourth point emphasized is that we said that the soul does not have any particular place where it resides in the body, like blood or heart or brain. It is something that's probably fused in the whole body that doesn't have any particular location to be found in the body. We indicated also that according to one of the sayings of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, that the soul actually comes to being for each human being in the beginning of the fifth month of pregnancy. That's where it starts. Mm-hmm. And that the soul does not die with the death of the physical body. It continues to live. So we talked actually about four stages of the soul. First, when the soul is created in the womb of mothers. The second stage, when the soul unites with the body also in the earthly life. Mm-hmm. Thirdly, the stage where the soul had some type of existence between burial and the day of resurrection. And fourthly, when the soul unites again with the body in the day of judgment, and that's for the eternal reward or punishment. And finally, since we're talking about the soul, it was inevitable to touch on the subject of death and the attitude of Muslims towards death. And we said, of course, like any human beings, definitely no person really likes to think much about death. Some people try to avoid even talking about that. However, we try to indicate also that this is a subject that is worthwhile looking into, because it is a universal experience that everybody would have to go through sooner or later. We indicated that for the Muslim, death is merely a transition from one state of existence to another. That death is something that nobody can interfere into. That is, God has decided and predetermined already when exactly each person is going to die. There might be a variety of reasons that might appear to us, but this is something that is predetermined. And that the main worry of a true Muslim really is not whether he's going to die, but whether his deeds and beliefs in this life would qualify him for felicity in the life hereafter. And we cited finally that at the end of the program, particularly from chapter 67, beginning of chapter 67 in the Quran, that life and death are things that are created by God to test us as to whether we are going to conduct a life in accordance with His commands or not.
We were just beginning to touch on the discussion of what a person experiences at the time of death, and we ran out of time in our last program.
Right.
I wonder if perhaps you could go on and elaborate on this point and develop it a little bit further in terms of the experience, the death experience.
Right. I recall that the first thing really we tried to emphasize is that at the time of death, a person feels a desire to come back to life in order to catch up with good deeds. We cited one particular verse in the Quran. Maybe I can cite you another one today just to bring the topic into focus. That appears in the Quran in chapter 23, particularly in verse 99 and 100. And it describes, again, people, for example, who did not comply with the commands of God, what happens to them at the time of death. And it says, in falsehood will they be until when death comes to one of them, he says, or she says, O my Lord, send me back to life in order that I may work righteousness in the things I neglected. By no means, it is but a word, he says, or she says, before them is a partition till the day they are raised up. It's interesting to notice here that, first of all, that the desire, expression of desire to come back, to catch up with good works, even a good person at the time of death wish, if he would have lived a little longer, to do more good deeds, to be more charitable, so that he can accumulate more reward in his or her favor. But the interesting thing that perhaps you can come to a little later, when it says there's a partition, that once the person dies, it's almost like a partition between this earthly life, an interim period between this life and the resurrection. So as if there's some barrier that it is impossible to break and come back to the to this life. In addition to this, the thing that we didn't get into last time also is that a person's soul actually is taken by angels. Remember, a few programs back we talked about angels. We covered many aspects, but one aspect that we didn't describe really is the relationship between angels and the humans after or at the time of death and thereafter. So maybe you can relate that to integrate the whole picture. And we find that the Quran indicates that there are certain angels who are in charge mm-hmm. of taking the souls of humans. Just to give a sample of citations like this, for example, in the Quran, in chapter 6, in verse 61, قُلْ يَتَوَفَّاكُمْ مَلَكُ الْمَوْتِ الَّذِي وُكِّلَ بِكُمْ in 61, particularly in this verse, it says, He is, that's God, the irresistible, watching from above over His worshippers. And He sets guardians over you. Guardians, in this case, refers to angels. At length, when death approaches one of you, our angels take his soul, and they never fail in their duty. This is one indication. The other verse that I just cited earlier also, قُلْ يَتَوَفَّاكُمْ مَلَكُ الْمَوْتِ الَّذِي وُكِّلَ بِكُمْ That is, there is a particular angel who would be in charge of taking the soul of any particular human being. This appears in chapter 32 and verse 11. It says, The angel of death, put in charge of you, will duly take your souls. Then shall you be brought back to your Lord. So in a sense then, the soul is taken by the angels. One final remark, if I may, just to add to this. The overall nature of or experience of death is described in the Quran as sakra. Sakra means something like stupor or unconscious state at the time of the exit of the soul. That appears particularly in chapter 50, in verse 19.
In terms of the afterlife, which we talked a little bit about, at the time that a person is dying, Is there any way that the person can find out whether or not his or her afterlife will be a happy one or a sad one?
There are indications, yes, both in the Quran and in the saying of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. I can just give you some examples within the time available. But if you look into the Quran, you find that there are profiles of both states. That is for people who would be happy in the hereafter versus those who would be miserable. Let's take the first, the more hopeful profile first.
Good news first.
I hope so. First of all, a believer who had the right belief and who has done good deeds in life, the Quran indicates that he will be greeted by the angels of death and he will be assured of his destiny. So he would know before departing this life, in the very last moments, a person would know for sure where his destiny is going to be. I'll give you two citations on that profile. In chapter 16, verse 32, it says, الذين تتوفاهم الملائكة طيبين يقولون سلام عليكم. Notice the word سلام عليكم is the same greeting that the Muslim uses, peace be upon you. ادخلوا الجنة بما كنتم تعملون. Translate that. Namely, those whose lives the angels take in a state of purity, saying to them, peace be on you. That's at the time of death. Enter you the garden because of the good which you did in the world. Not only this, in another moving passage in the Quran, in chapter 41, verses 30 through 32, it gives also a description of the exit of the soul of the believer. It says, in the case of those who say, our Lord is God, or Allah, which means God, capital G, and further stand straight and steadfast. So they don't just say it, they continue. Steadfast. The angels descend on them from time to time. That includes, of course, the time of death also. Fear you not, they suggest, nor grieve, but receive the glad tiding of the garden of bliss, the one which you were promised. We, that is the angels, are your protectors in this life and in the hereafter. Therein shall you have all that your soul shall desire. Therein shall you have all that you ask for. A hospitable gift from one oft forgiven, most merciful. This is one profile, which I hope that this would be the one that most people would focus on and try to achieve. But the picture must be balanced.
Yes.
The Quran also gives a profile of those dying in a state of unbelief, disbelief, or confused beliefs, as well as, of course, wickedness in terms of wrongdoing. The picture is quite different, but again, to keep the balance and fairness, I selected also two citations from the Quran describing the picture. Obviously, when the person is wicked or unbeliever, at the time of death, the soul will not be too anxious to get out because it knows what its destiny is going to be. So there will be some reluctance. For example, in chapter 8, in verse 50 in the Quran, وَلَوْ تَرَى إِذْ يَتَوَفَّى الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا الْمَلَائِكَةُ يَضْرِبُونَ وُجُوهَهُمْ وَأَدْبَارَهُمْ. Translates, if you could see when the angels take the souls of the unbelievers at the time of death, how they smite their faces and their backs, saying, taste the penalty of the blazing fire. Of course, it doesn't mean that this is smiting is just like the physical smiting where you can see these signs on the backs, but people do feel that pain of being rebuked at the time of death. In another strong and vivid description also, in chapter 6, verse 93, وَلَوْ تَرَى إِذِ الظَّالِمُونَ فِي غَمَرَاتِ الْمَوْتِ. This is a part of a verse which is much longer, but that part that describes the scene, it says, if you could but see how the wicked do fare in the flood of confusion at death. Flood of confusion at death, which is very similar to the term used before, the feeling of unconsciousness, the stupor confusion at the time of death. If you could see how the wicked do fare in the flood of confusion at death, the angels stretch forth their hands, saying, yield up your souls. This day shall you receive your reward, a penalty of shame, for that you used to tell lies against God and scornfully to reject of his signs. So in that sense then, the Quran gives both profiles, which gives a clear indication that any human being before departing this world can really get the feel as to where exactly his or her destiny is likely to be.
These are very vivid descriptions. I'm curious to know if there are any other additional indications of the kinds of things that an individual experiences at the time of death. Is there any other references that...
Well, there's a very lengthy, particularly one saying of Prophet Muhammad, which appears in the collection of Ahmad ibn Muhammad, called Musnad. But we have to be careful when I go through this description that we should not put it exactly in the same material image that we might have, because you describe, or that hadith or saying of the Prophet describes something which is really inaccessible to us to understand in full sense. So it's a description which gives the sense of material punishment, but again, what nature of material or physical punishment or reward or feelings might be is something that could be beyond our understanding. But again, in that saying of the Prophet, he gives two profiles again. For the pious, the person who's accepted by God in terms of belief and good deeds, he says that when the person is just on the verge of departing from this life and starting the life hereafter, they will come to him angels with shiny faces like the sun, again reflecting their joy. They will sit across from his eye, so he will see them just across his eye. And then the angel of death, the particular angel in charge of taking the soul, will be sitting at his head. And then at the time when his soul is getting out, the angel will say, come out, you good soul, come to a forgiveness and pleasure from your Lord. And then he says the soul will get out of the body in the same way that a drop of water would fall. That means easy and smoothly. And he said then that this soul is taken by the angel. Again, we can't think of the soul as something physical or material, but apparently the person sees something or perceives what's going on. The soul is taken by these angels and they start descending into heavens. Whenever angels notice that those people are passing, they say, what's that nice smell? Like smell of musk, very flagrant smell. So the angels who are carrying the soul would say, this is the soul of so-and-so, the son of so-and-so, he just died. So the angels continue praying also on his behalf for forgiveness and so on. And then whenever the angels move from one layer or one level in heavens to the other, the angels also keep coming and participating and praying for the dead soul. And it says then it reaches a certain level in heavens where God gives the command to the angels. And he says, take the book of deeds. As we mentioned before, every human being has a book of deeds. When we're talking about the program on angels, that the angels also keep our deeds, record of our deeds in this life. He said, take the book of the deed of that individual and put it in the highest, that is, in heavens. And then he commands them to return his soul back to earth in preparation, of course, for the accountability immediately after burial. And this is an area we can come to. This is one profile. The second profile for the wicked or unbelievers, and he says that the person also sees angel coming to take his soul, but he sees them in darkened faces, grim faces, so that again reflects the anger and displeasure of God with him. And then he says again they would be sitting or standing across from his eyes, from his sight. The angel of death would come also at his head. But instead of telling him like he told the good person or the believer.
Yes.
He says, "Oh, you wicked soul, come out. Come out to a displeasure from God and anger." And he described it in such a way that it's almost like being pulled rather than flowing smoothly. And then he said the angels would take this soul. The smell of it would stink, but again, it's not physical smell, because again, we're talking about a different level of existence altogether. Yes. When the soul ascends to heavens, to the first layer, the angels wonder what that bad smell. They say this is the soul of such and such person, a wicked person who just died. And then it is said in this saying of the Prophet that for the wicked soul, it is not allowed, like the good soul, to keep going up in heavens. In fact, when Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, reached that stage, he said that the soul would not be permitted to go any further. Indeed, he recited one verse in the Quran to prove his point, and that was in chapter 7, verse 40. إن الذين كفروا إن الذين كذبوا بآياتنا واستكبروا عنها لا تفتح لهم أبواب السماء. That is, to those who reject our signs, the signs of God, and treat them with arrogance, no opening will there be of the gates of heavens. It doesn't have to be physical gates, permission for the soul to God. Nor will they enter the gardens until the camel can pass through the eye of the needle. Such is our reward for those in sin. And of course, since no camel can get through the eye of the needle, it means then that these wicked souls would not be permitted to go upward. And then it says that God would give the command to the angels, but this time to return the soul to earth and put the book of deeds of that individual in the lowest of the low. Again, an expression of what the destiny of the person is likely to be. And finally, the Prophet recited on this particular section to show again how that soul is thrown and not permitted to go up. وَمَنْ يُشْرِكْ بِاللَّهِ فَكَأَنَّمَا خَرَّ مِنَ السَّمَاءِ فَتَخْطَفُهُ الطَّيْرُ أَوْ تَهْوِي بِهِ الرِّيحُ فِي مَكَانٍ سَحِيقٍ. That is, if anyone assigns partners to God or others sharing his divine attribute, he is as if he had fallen from heaven and been snatched up by birds, or the wind has swooped like a bird on its prey, like to and thrown him into a far distant place. In other words, a person is just removed to the earth. This is actually part of the hadith, much lengthier. Maybe some other points of the saying would come when we get into the area of what happens in the after burial. But in that sense, like I said, the hadith provides even a more vivid and clear sense of the sensation or the feeling of the dying person, good or bad.
We hear a lot recently in books that have been published, in TV statements that have been made, TV programs and statements that have been made by individuals about the near, what we could call near-death experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to ask you about your reaction to these stories, and just before I get you to give your reaction, I appreciate if perhaps you could summarize for the benefit of the viewers some of these experiences.
Well, this is an interesting area. There have been several books written on that subject, like Life After Death, reflecting on life after death, or Life After Life. And basically, these are reports by a large number of people who have been near death. That is, in, have gone through a very serious type of operations, or were about to drown or fall, very fatal type of things, but they did not actually die. And it is reported in this literature that the things that those people see are quite similar. For example, they say that they hear a kind of uncomfortable buzzing sound, that they feel as if they're moving fast through a dark and long tunnel, that some of them reported that as if they are outside of their own physical body and watching that body. They see their body, for example, on the operation table. Some reported also that they have seen the souls of their relatives or friends who died before. Some reported that they have seen their lives like a whole program or film very quickly in front of their own eyes, that they were requested or asked to evaluate their own lives, that they had a different kind of vision altogether about time and knowledge. They have a totally different feeling that cannot be described. They said it's a totally different idea. Some reported that they have seen people or souls in bodies which are somewhat similar from the physical bodies that we see here on this earth. Others said that they heard music. There were lots of light, like a city of light. That there were rivers, mountains, and vegetation, but quite different from the physical thing that we see in this life. Some reported having seen souls which are sad and bewildered. Others talked about those who committed suicide as continuing to face the same kind of problems that caused them to commit suicide in the first place. In other words, they haven't solved their problems by suicide. This is just a kind of brief summary. Of course, I cannot do justice because there are lots of literature in that, but I think these are some of the highlights of the common experiences reported by people.
Well, in the couple of minutes that we have remaining on today's program, I'll be curious to know your evaluation of the accuracy of these reports and how you assess them, particularly from a Muslim perspective.
Okay, in general sense, before I come to the Muslim perspective, there are some methodological problems in looking at this type of reports. I'm not saying one dismiss it altogether. But one problem is that the whole study, or studies actually, are based on the statements or reports made by people who are so-called near death in terms of their own experience. In one of the books also, one of the authors, for example, gave an excuse for not publishing the names of people who reported that, but to some, that excuse didn't seem to be quite convincing, which might raise some issue. But there is one issue, not only from the Muslim perspective, but from the perspective of any believer in any divinely revealed faith, that almost all of those reports unanimously report that they have been enjoying, that the things are all like, this looked like a picnic. Some even say that some people wish to go back to this because it's a good experience. And that really raises a very serious question. Because in effect, what it says is that everybody can have this enjoyable picnic at death and life afterwards, regardless of his or her own belief or deeds in this life. This is totally contrary to anything that any prophet or messenger has taught. And promotion of this literature could really result in a very serious attitude of indifference towards good deeds, indifference towards doing the right thing or evil thing, making the choice for evil, since everything would be okay. I think in that sense it's contrary to that. It is quite possible to, possibly, just as a hypothesis, that maybe some of these might be satanic visions to dope people into believing that it doesn't make much difference. Everybody is going to the city of lights and rivers and music and all that type of thing, which, like I said, is not really, not even logical, let alone religion, to equate good with evil. For the Muslim in particular, as I said earlier in the program, the only authentic source of knowledge about the unseen is not speculation or experimentation or intellect, but for this unseen things that's beyond our understanding, one has to depend fully on divine revelation. And one final word on this point, near death is no death. In other words, an experience of someone who was about to die, and then he was cured, somebody who's gone through a very dangerous operation and then survived it, is totally different from the real thing, from the actual irrevocable death, an experience that nobody has seen that and came back to us to tell us. Everybody would have to find out for himself.
Brother Jamal, we've exhausted our time for today. We want to invite all of you back next week when we'll continue our discussion on the soul. We'd like to look at questions such as the Islamic point of view on suicide. We want to talk about the soul and what happens to it in the life and the hereafter. That's our program for today. Thank you for watching Islam in Focus. As-salamu alaykum.